Chapter 25, Satan Made Me Do It. The South African cricket team played their first test match after 20 years of isolation in 1992. The match, which took place in the Caribbean, was against the West Indies. To mark their return from the cold, the Springboks were renamed the Proteas after the national flower. It was a new team for a new country. One of the South African players was a fresh-faced and clean-cut 22-year-old with eyebrows as thick as caterpillars. He was from the Free State, where he was a cricket hero, and his family was cricket royalty. The young man's name was Hansie Cronier. The match against the West Indies, which South Africa lost by 52 runs, wasn't an auspicious start for Cronier. He scored only 7 runs in his 2 innings. But he soon showed he was meant to be playing cricket at the highest level. As an aggressive batsman, a gritty bowler, and a great fielder, everyone agreed that Hansie Cronier had mettle. 2 years after his first test, and still the side's youngest player, Cronier was made vice-captain for a tour of Australia. When the captain, Kepler Wessels, broke a finger in the Sydney test, Cronier took charge on the final morning. Australia, South Africa's mortal enemies, needed 117 runs for victory with 6 wickets in hand. Cronier's direct hit to run out Shane Warne was a crucial blow, and the Australians fell 6 runs short. When Wessels had to return home because of his injury, 24-year-old Cronier became South Africa's second youngest test captain since the first national team was selected in 1889. He was appointed captain permanently when Wessels retired late in 1994, the year the country transitioned from apartheid to democracy. Cronier soon became an icon for a wounded nation trying to heal from its bitter past. After the Amaboka Boka won the Rugby World Cup in 1995 and Bafana Bafana won the Africa Cup of Nations the following year, sport was basking in Rainbow Nation euphoria, and Cronier was an Afrikaner post-apartheid hero. The 1990s were the glory years for South African cricket, thanks to Jonty Rhodes' superhuman fielding skills, Alan Donald's bowling fire, Sean Pollock's deadly accuracy, Herschel Gibbs' batting flair, Lance Klusener's heroics, and Jacques Callis' unparalleled talent. They were fiercely competitive, but looked like they enjoyed playing. Cronier always seemed to score runs when the team needed them the most, and as a bowler, he troubled the batsmen. When India's master blaster Sachin Tendulkar retired, he was asked about the toughest bowler he'd faced. It wasn't Shoaib Akhtar, Glenn McGrath, or even Warne. It was Cronier. As a captain, Cronier had a never-say-die attitude. With him in charge, the team may not have won every match, but they never gave up. The Proteas were the little team that could, and Cronier played a crucial role in reinstating South Africa as a force to be reckoned with in world cricket. It wasn't always easy, and Cronier wasn't always easygoing. Tension could sometimes be seen on his brooding face, with his bushy eyebrows furrowing in frustration. Cronier was internationally respected among his peers, but more importantly, he was a role model at home, an honest-to-goodness star South Africans could unite behind. Adults admired him, youngsters wanted to be him, and President Nelson Mandela had a soft spot for him. He was lauded for his forward-thinking and innovative captaincy when he revived the 5th test against England in Centurion in January 2000. The match was about to end in a soggy draw after 3 days of rain when Cronier forfeited South Africa's 2nd innings to set up a thrilling contest. The adjectives piled up quicker than Gary Kirsten amassing runs against Bangladesh. Courageous, majestic, honest, charismatic, a man of honour, inspirational, a good sport, a national asset. And what's more, he was a devout Christian who wore a bracelet with the initials WWJD. What would Jesus do? He'd turned to God after accidentally killing a little girl who had darted in front of his car when he was traveling to Empangeni in KwaZulu-Natal for a provincial game in the early 1990s. After that day, he said, he never allowed himself to shy away from his moral responsibility. Cronier was a paragon of virtue and integrity. Except, of course, he wasn't. It was a lie. On 11th April 2000, the truth came tumbling out when he made a 3 a.m. phone call to Ali Bacher, the United Cricket Board of South Africa's chief, and confessed to being a greedy, money-grubbing cheat. South Africans woke up that morning to the news that Cronje was a fraud. 4 days earlier, Indian police said they had recordings of Cronje conspiring with an Indian bookie named Sanjay Chawla to fix matches. The two discussed targets, playing conditions, and batting orders. Cronje denied the allegations. "Absolute rubbish," he hissed. And the United Cricket Board issued a statement in the morning giving him its full backing. "Cronje is known for his unquestionable integrity and honesty," it said. That afternoon, the board issued a second statement with a quote from Cronje. "I am stunned. The allegations are completely without substance. I have been privileged to play for South Africa since 1992, and I want to ensure, every South African that I have made 100% effort to win every match that I have played. It has been an honor to play for South Africa, and I would never do anything to let my country down." Nevertheless, the Indians insisted Cronje had been caught out and charged him with cheating. It was all anyone in South Africa could talk about, usually with a disclaimer such as, "If the Indian police had accused anyone else in the team, even Jonty for God's sake, I might have considered it. But Hansi? Not Hansi." Callers jammed talk radio shows to scoff at the incompetent Indian police. "Just who do they think they are?" was a common refrain. Cronje continued to deny the allegations until he couldn't cope with the pressure and confessed to Bacher, cracking open Hansigate, South Africa's most sordid sporting scandal. In the days that followed, Cronje faxed a devil-made-me-do-it confession to his pastor, Ray McCauley. "In a moment of stupidity and weakness, I allowed Satan and the world to dictate terms to me. The moment I took my eyes off Jesus, the whole world turned dark, and it felt like someone had stuck a knife through my chest," he wrote. A commission headed by Judge Edwin King was established to unravel Cronje's web of lies. Testifying, Cronje confessed to having received about $100,000 in bribes over the years, but insisted he had never fixed a match. He claimed that ex-India captain Mohammad Azharuddin introduced him to a bookie named Mukesh Gupta, not the last Gupta to capture a South African, who offered him money to throw a test in 1996. Cronje corrupted Herschel Gibbs, who agreed to score fewer than 20 runs in a one-day international against India. But Gibbs, who once admitted to never having read a book, not even his own biography, forgot about the deal and scored 74. Henry Williams was told to concede more than 50 runs in the same match. They were both offered $15,000. The captain's innovation and good sportsmanship in forfeiting the innings and contriving a result in the Centurion Test against England 3 months earlier turned out to be a sham. He'd been paid 53,000 rand and given a leather jacket by Marlon Arenstam, a gambler who was reported to have staked a fortune on the match ending in a result. Cronje was offered immunity from prosecution in South Africa if he made a full disclosure about his role in match fixing. There are still question marks about whether he told the truth, but one indisputable fact emerged from the commission. Cronje just couldn't say no to money. "I had a great passion for the game, my teammates and my country, but the problem is the unfortunate love I have for money. I do like money," he said. At the end of his testimony and three-day cross-examination, he broke down in tears. On 11th October 2000, Cronje was banned for life from all cricket-related activities. His fall from grace was quicker than a Dale Steyn delivery. A new adjective attached to his name, and every story described him as the disgraced Hansi Cronje. But he bounced back and landed a job as a financial manager for an earth-moving equipment company and started studying towards an MBA. On the 1st of June 2002, he was killed when a light cargo plane in which he was traveling crashed into the Otaniqua Mountains in the Western Cape. He was just 32. While many forgave Cronje, he came 11th in an SABC poll of the top 100 great South Africans in 2004. His early death meant he was unable to truly atone and find redemption. His reputation will remain forever tainted. See chapter 49. A lie, Bacher. In 2022, when Dr. Ali Bacher turned 80, he gave a talk to the Limud Conference in Johannesburg on the life lessons he'd learned from growing up, captaining the national team, and becoming one of the world's most influential cricket administrators. One of his lessons, he said, was never to lie. He told an anecdote about how he'd been asked a question by a journalist. He lied, and the lie was exposed in a newspaper the next day. In the great schemes of lies, it wasn't significant. I can't even remember what it was. But he said being exposed embarrassed him. The moral of the story, he told the audience, is never lie because you will always be caught out. Actually, Dr. Bacher, you're half right. You shouldn't lie. Not because you will get caught out, but because it's wrong.